I got the honorable task of being the last speaker. I hope you're still awake enough that you can at least partly listen to my talk. Who of you has ever heard about AFS? Who of you has actually used it? Okay, a lot less people. AFS and Samba, in some ways, perform similar tasks. They are both server systems that provide network file access. In details, they really differ vastly. What I'm going to do is, I'm going to give a brief introduction to AFS, what it is, why it's designed the way it is, what design risk constraints have driven its development. I'll talk about the integrations we had to face at IBM. All this work I've done here has been funded by IBM for a project called Stonehenge, where they use the AFS system as a really, really scalable file server. Then I'll present the solutions that Samba has. The path we have taken to get around these integration problems. What is AFS? It's a network file system that is really old. It's at least 15 years. Jim, do you know how old it really is? Older than that, at least. Yeah, it's really, really old. Its roots are at the Carnegie Mellon University. Its name came from, at least I read that, I'm not sure if it's correct, both founders, Andrew Carnegie and Andrew Mellon, so we needed an Andrew file system, as they say. The problem they had to face, or they wanted to really solve, was to decently serve 20,000 client machines with server hardware of 20 years ago. Even these days, I think it's a stretch to really have 20,000 clients on a single server. It might be possible, but for failover purposes, that is not really what you want. And with the hardware of 20 years ago, it would have been simply impossible. So much of the design of AFS has been driven by the demand to have good support for more than one server, for really many servers. This should be hidden from the user in any possible way that we have to deal with more than one server. The history of AFS is also interesting when you look at the number of entities that have owned it, Carnegie Mellon University. Then it went to a company called TransArc, as I read, which was then acquired by IBM, and IBM at one point said, okay, in 2 years we got this great successor to AFS, so let's essentially dump it. They put it into open source, and nowadays they are trying to really put up support for it again. Once you really open source stuff, it's hard to get it back to proprietary. Scalability. We have to deal with a lot of servers. One of the things that you have to face is the authentication. Given that I have maybe 100 file servers, I don't want to be forced to log into each of these servers individually. So what you need is some kind of distributed authentication. And that's exactly what Kerberos was made for. You type in your password once in a secure manner, and then some magic in the background gives you tickets, gives you access to any number of servers. It's all the client application that does this for you. You hand the client application your password once, and then you get a binary blob from the KDC, the Key Distribution Center, that gives you access for the next 10 hours. The client application has to take care of that you can really access server number 1, number 2, and number 3, and all the others. But it really helps. Given this number of servers, AFS couldn't follow the model that NFS has followed. NFS trusts the client machine to really having authenticated the user. This doesn't really Magic University environment where many users have root access on their local machines, you don't want that to have, you don't want them to be able to fake any user identity in the network. One point I'm going to come back to is the file server gets the user identity as authenticated by the Kerberos KDC via the Kerberos ticket. And to get the terminology right, the KDC in AFS terminology is the so-called KA server, probably for historical reasons. AFS file semantics, file access semantics, they are a bit different from local file access semantics. The main point here is AFS is a file system that doesn't lie. NFS pretends to be local POSIX semantics, but it's, as Jim it was Steve who said this morning, it only is an 80% solution. For example, what happens when you unlink a file that's still open? Local POSIX semantics gets a handle, keeps a handle around. The file data is only really deleted when the last handle to that file is closed. NFS has to rename it in a magic way. That's only one of the nastinesses of NFS. AFS doesn't lie. And when they say, okay, we can't really support local POSIX semantics, what can we do towards really real better scalability when we just dump this Go? What they, for example, did is they say, okay, we don't have byte range locks. What are byte range locks used for? Databases, for example, and having access, an access database, for example, an MDB file on a shared file system, it's not really a good idea, even in the Windows world where they do have byte range locks. This tends to destroy databases. When you want real concurrent access to shared data, you need a real database. This is nothing you want to put on a shared file system. Another change is that whenever you open a file for writing, and you write to parts of the file, you make a single write system call, another one, these write system calls are not visible to other clients until you close the file. And this has really consequences for your possibility of caching the stuff. You only write locally, and then when the client has spare cycles or when the network is not loaded, the client can write it back to the server, those changes, and it only really has to sync things to the server when the client application closes the file. So this really opens the door for aggressive client caching, and AFS goes so far to really have the client cache persistent on disk. So when you reboot your client workstation and you have your Mozilla binary and the Mozilla binary hasn't changed in the last hour, then you will not be forced to really load it over via the network again. Another thing that really helps scalability is the so-called volume database. AFS, at least on the Unix, offers its file space under /AFS. The volume location database is a central database that can be automatically queried by client workstations. It shows where the physical location of particular directories of particular volumes is. And so the user, unlike NFS, doesn't have to know where the physical location of the data is. The client workstation asks automatically and dynamically where the data is, and this opens the door for data replication, for data relocation during being accessed, and this is really helpful in large environments. Just imagine you have your 5 servers, you have enough disk space imagine you have 5 servers with 200 gigabyte, you have a terabyte on 5 servers, and you have enough space, free space, to really store the data on one server, on the other ones, and you see, okay, one server needs to be maintained, it needs to be taken off the network. What you do is, in the AFS, you simply move away the data from that server while this data is being accessed. So you can easily take down a server from the network while the clients are, the clients don't notice it. So this makes server maintenance, backup restore, a lot easier than with other schemes. Another one, we have the protection server. We've seen the we have seen one user database, the KA server, the KDC. The other one is the protection server. The essential task of the protection server is the last one on the last bullet here on the slide. Determine a group ID, the group IDs of a user. So a user comes in, a user wants to authenticate, a user wants to access some files, and the protection server then says, okay, this username is a member of this and this and this numeric group ID for evaluation of ACLs on the file system. This also means, okay, we have to map names to numeric IDs and vice versa and all the other tasks here. Oh, a nice feature, users can create groups of their own. You get a group quota in the PT server when you are a user of AFS, a normal, non-privileged user. How does the file server know whether a particular access a user wants is, has to be permitted? We have Kerberos, so we need an initial ticket. This is done normally via the user command klog, which is kinit, which is the kinit of normal Kerberos 5 installations. The client workstation asks the KDC, the KA server, for the ticket. We hopefully get it once when we authenticate ourselves with the plaintext password. And this is important. The plaintext password is needed. The client application klog then pushes the ticket into the client workstation kernel. When the client then accesses the client application then accesses a file, this ticket is sent along with the request. The file server can unpack this, decrypt, unpack the ticket, and sees the user name in the ticket. And then the file server goes to the PT server for the numeric IDs that have been stored on the file system for access control lists. Access controls are a bit different from what you get, what you're used to in the Windows and in the Unix world. We have permissions only per directory. Even file access to all the files in the directory is regulated there on the directory. So when you think about the Windows inheritance rules, when you create a new file, when you have, what are the exact echo semantic on a newly created file? And on a newly created directory. This is really nasty to get right in Windows. And having the notion of only access control lists on directories makes that a lot easier. I create a file, there's nothing to do. I create a directory, I simply copy the parent one. We have directory permissions lookup, which is the X and R bit on the Unix. We have insert and delete. On the file, we can read and write. And we have a specific right to for a user to lock a file. I said we have no byte range locking. What we do have is we can exclusively lock a file for write access, which then is the whole file. And very important, we have the special permission we can hand, we can give to somebody to administer the echoes on a file system. What are the integration problems we had to face when really doing AFS to Samba or Samba to AFS gateway? What's the whole point of doing this? There's Windows clients for AFS out there, but the whole point of Samba is you could perfectly fine install a PCNFS to access Unix file systems. The point of Samba is we don't want to modify the clients. We could go and really install the AFS client for Windows, but it has all the typical problems that Windows software has. AFS would have to closely follow all the Windows API changes, internal API changes, and Microsoft is very good at really tweaking little pieces with each service pack to break specific clients. As I said, the KLog application needs the is the application to get the ticket, and the protocol is designed in a way that to get the ticket we need the plaintext password. The problem is Samba never sees the plaintext password. You could say encrypt passwords equals no, but you lose so much functionality these days, you don't want the plaintext password. If not for security reasons, then for functionality reasons. You lose so much when you do plaintext passwords as a Samba, you don't really want it. We needed a way around that. Then when you integrate an AFS environment into a Windows domain, you need to store the echoes, and to really evaluate the echoes, you need the PTS database to be synchronous with your AFS database. So AFS, with your Windows database. Windows stores group memberships, groups, users, whatever, and the AFS file server needs to see exactly the same group memberships, otherwise you're out of sync and you get problems. There are ways to manually dump the whole thing from Windows and store that into AFS, but this is not really nice. One of these problems have been solved recently online. Then, AFS echoes are different from both NT and Unix, and we want more than one Samba server to hand out the same AFS file space. I'm going to talk about a bit more why we want to do that. First problem, the KA server, the one who needs the plaintext password to get a Kerberos ticket. And Samba acts as a proxy. Somebody comes to me as a Samba server, and I need to authenticate against the file server on behalf of the user. So I have to persuade the file server, okay, I'm Volker Lendecke, where I'm not. I don't know Volker Lendecke's password, but I want to persuade my file server that I'm Volker Lendecke, because the user has persuaded me in some way or the other. I ask the domain controller, okay, Volker Lendecke really has typed in his password correctly. So Samba has persuaded itself Volker Lendecke is really Volker Lendecke. We switch to a Unix ID. Now comes the interesting point. You could try to get the AFS the Active Directory ticket. The first idea is to use that. Three problems. First one, AFS AD, Active Directory, is Kerberos version 5, whereas AFS currently there are AFS currently is still version 4. There are some developments being done that version 4 is to be replaced, but we have a problem in AFS because the ticket size is limited, I think, to about 300 whatever bytes. And this works fine with standard MIT or Heimdall version 5 tickets, but when you have the pack and the ticket that is handed out by Microsoft DC, it gets a lot longer. So we might have to work around that. You could work around that with a Kerberos 5.2.4 daemon. Second problem, you can never be sure that you really get the Kerberos ticket from the workstation. Windows falls back to NTLM when you don't, and there you don't get a ticket. In really, really many cases, as we heard, time synchronization problems, DNS problems, you connect to the IP address, all sorts of other things. And the really systematic problem that we have, we get a ticket from the workstation. This ticket is handed out with a specific server in mind. Kerberos works in a way that you get a service ticket for a specific server. So the workstation believes it talks to a Samba server, which should be similar to a Windows server. So the workstation asks the domain controller for a ticket to give it access to the SIF service on the Samba server. What I as a Samba server would need is a ticket for the AFS service, which is a completely different target principle. And this is the principle one that this simply doesn't work. You could do it with constraint delegation on Windows 2003. This hasn't been implemented, but because there's really other problems. What we now do is, what really authenticates a user, or what persuades a file server that Volker Lendecke has really authenticated himself, it's the fact that the name Volker Lendecke has been encrypted with a shared secret, with a secret that has been shared between the KDC and the file server. And this is the only thing that, in the end, persuades the file server, okay, Volker Lendecke is really Volker Lendecke. So what we do is we take the file server's shared secret with the KDC, hand it to the samba-secrets.tdb, and now we have a way to fake the tickets our own, to really be a KDC for AFS. And AFS developer says, okay, can you still sleep in security sense, in security-wise? We can't do anything else. It's the best we can do with current protocols. And the answer is, okay, you have to see Samba as part of the trusted computing base in the file server sense. And so you have to trust Samba anyway, and it's the best we can do. It's really an easy solution around all the three problems I've mentioned here. Next one, synchronization of the Windows user database, especially group memberships, groups into the AFS PT server. When you look at the two slides before, the file server gets the username via the ticket, then has to ask the PT server for a list of numeric IDs, which are only 32-bit identities. Samba has a daemon that exactly does that. Converting a name to a numeric ID via the SID, which this daemon is WinBind. And what I've done now is the PT server, that's the daemon that provides the appropriate service in AFS, it's just a daemon that listens on a UDP socket and speaks some publicly available protocol. And so why not just rewrite this daemon to directly not ask its own database, but ask the WinBind, the locally running WinBind, which then asks the domain controller. That's the easy way. It has to be made scalable, and this is one of the points where WinBind really needs to be rewritten. The PT server is with a lightweight threading library, written with a lightweight threading library, and it really isn't fit to cope with a blocking call to WinBind. So listing users in a IBM, HP, whatever domain is not what you want to do with PT server, with a PT proxy. We really need to fix WinBind. That's hopefully going to happen. AFS echoes, completely wildly different from what you see on POSIX. Samba has a mapping to POSIX echoes. Samba certainly could be adapted to have local and TFS, to be simply a gateway to local and TFS echoes, if they would be there. But none of them fit the AFS model, so the easy way was to write a separate VFS model. What's the final goal of having this? Simply being able to view and to set the AFS ACLs from within the Windows GUI. Right mouse click, properties, security, and you're done with. You can view and administer your Windows echoes, your AFS echoes. Here's another one. AFS is really made for aggressive client caching. One application might be, okay, we have two locations, one in the US, one in Europe, the third one might be maybe in Australia, really high latencies between those. Simply getting a photon from Europe to America and around the globe, it takes a non-zero amount of time, so, and Windows is not really made to cope with high latency SMB networks. So what could we do? One scenario we had in mind was to set up a central AFS server that has the physical volumes on its local disk or ZAN or whatever, and to set up an AFS client in each of the remote locations that might have high latency networks between them. And then share all these files with different SMBDs that only talk to the local AFS client. This really conflicts with the SMB semantics. For example, you need to inform all the users that access this file about a bind range lock. You need to inform, okay, I have opened this with deny read, deny write, or what all these share modes that Jeremy, Trish, and all know better than me. But what you do have is you have an error message that you can send on an open call that a Windows does to a file that's called sharing violation. This is simply saying to the client, it tells the client, okay, somebody else has opened this file, and you can't open it now. You get depending on the application, you get a decent error message that says, okay, somebody else has opened this file, go to him and, fix this. What we do is we use the AFS locking call that is available, that has high latency, but that is not that critical on an open system call that the Windows client issues to Samba, and we simply lock the complete file for us. This is a violation of the SMB semantics, but I think given high latency networks, it's the best we can achieve currently. So what can you do? You can have, for example, some kind of project directory for people across the world, and they at least don't get corrupt files. They might not get the correct Windows semantics, but they at least don't get corrupt files when storing, for example, Access or Excel sheets for project reports or whatever. They get informed when another user has this file open, and what we then use is the AFS caching semantics to really get local speed when we access the file. Yeah, that's these three things, four parts: the KA server, the PT proxy, then the AFS echoes, and the AFS exclusive locking have been the latest developments. Currently, we ripped out most of the AFS user database, and I think what is left now is the best of AFS, namely the volume location database. Complete location transparency, replication of volumes, without the hassle to set up, even for AFS, two more user databases, and I hope this is going to be fun for you. The KA server is currently in code; it's released. The PT proxy not yet, but ask me, you can get the code. Once it's proven to be stable, you can. I will check it into Samba. There was an immediate question by Trish. Wait for the microphone, please.
Give me some time. Just about the share modes on the previous slide, I think the sharing violation is the right approach, but perhaps that would only apply to two Windows clients going to different AFS nodes. Am I right that from your description, if two clients happen to be connecting to the same node, then they will still get this sharing violation?
Yes, they do.
Right.
That's the current approach. We could have an optimization for that.
Yes, I think that would be quite important, so that if you do have two Windows users that are on the same node, that you do get perfect Windows semantics. That will allow people who run into problems, they could have a policy of please collect to that node for the whatever application it is. Mm-hmm. I also think you'll get troubles with this with Terminal Server and also even with some more complex applications where the application opens the file several times.
That has been taken care of. But thanks for the hint on IRC.
But not for Terminal Server where it's different users on the same SMBD.
I would have to look at the code.
Because you do need to be able to deny them appropriately when you have multiple users coming over the one socket.
This is not committed yet. It needs to see testing, but it's the approach I'm currently pursuing.
It would be perhaps ideal to aim to be able to pass a SIFS verification test on a single node. Mm-hmm. I think you're absolutely right that achieving exact semantics between nodes is impractical for speed, but within one node it should be practical.
Yeah. Okay, but this assumes that you have a central... the central database where you store your logs that you have gotten from the AFS server.
You should be able to use the same locking.tdb per node.
Yeah.
So that gives
But we have to share that across the SMBDs.
It already is shared across the SMBDs within one node.
This information has to be shared.
Per node.
Yeah. Currently it's single process only.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Richard here?
So you said that AFS doesn't have byte range locking. What other Windows applications do you know of that can't therefore use the AFS service, like Outlook, for example?
As long as you connect to the AFS file space only via a single SMBD, we provide perfect byte range locking. We only say POSIX locking equals no, because Samba handles the Windows style of byte range locking completely itself. As long as you don't connect to the same AFS space via two SMBDs, everything is fine. We don't have a problem. And this is definitely the approach to use when you don't have any latency or speed problems between your nodes. This is using AFS on a large file space, you have to make sure that a single physical file has only is only been handed out by, via a single SMBD. The importance of this cannot be overestimated. Otherwise, you're asking for all kinds of trouble. Any other questions? Okay, then thanks for your attention.
So on the program, we have a 20-minute break, but I don't think this is a good idea to make that. Do you agree on that? Let's say we make a 5-minute break, take a leak or something, and then continue immediately. Is that okay for you, Volker?
No problem. I need to drink something in between, but that's all.
Okay, then let's do that. Back in 5 minutes.